like you said, in times of war, when the war machine heats up and the rhetoric gets inflated. But we got to go. Thank you, Robbie. Thank you, everybody, for calling. Sorry, Greg, and I think Jack, for not getting to you. You got to call sooner. I got to go. Thanks, Ty, for running the board. Paul Rowland signing off for KBOO Wednesday Talk Radio.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:58. Next up is Fight the Empire.
Good morning. It's time. Hello?
You're on.
Okay, good morning. This is time to fight the empire. My name is Per Fagerang, and very interesting discussion in Paul Rowland's show, which people might want to continue. Callers might want to continue that. One interesting item that I came to mind here is that this is from the Guardian, UK Guardian. Vladimir Putin wanted Russia to join NATO. George Robertson, a former British Labour Defence Secretary, who led NATO between 1999 and 2003, said Putin made it clear at their first meeting that he wanted Russia to be part of Western Europe. They want to be part of that secure, stable, prosperous West that Russia was out of at that time, he said. The Labour peer recalled an early meeting with Putin, and Putin said, "When are you going to invite us to join NATO?" And Robertson said, "Well, we don't invite people to join NATO. They apply to join NATO." And he said, Putin, "Well, we're not standing in line with a lot of countries that don't matter." The account chimes in with what Putin told the late David Frost in a BBC interview shortly before he was first inaugurated as Russian president more than 21 years ago. Putin told Frost he would not rule out joining NATO, quote, if and when Russia's views are taken into account as those of an equal partner. He told Frost it was hard for him to visualize NATO as an enemy. Quote, Russia is part of the European culture, and I cannot imagine my own country in isolation from what we often call the civilized world. Lord Robertson's comments on the One Decision podcast, which is presented by a Mike Michelle Kosinski, former CNN journalist. It underscores how Putin's worldview has evolved during his 21 years of unbroken rule in Russia. After the Orange Revolution street protests in Ukraine in 2004, Putin became increasingly suspicious of the West, which he blamed for funding pro-democracy NGOs. He was further angered by NATO's continuing expansion into Central and Eastern Europe. Romania, Bulgaria, Slovakia, Slovenia, Latvia, Estonia, and Lithuania chose to join the alliance in 2004. Croatia and Albania followed in 2009. Georgia and Ukraine were promised membership in 2008, but have remained outside. So that's a very interesting development right there, that Putin was, in a way, well, you could say he was kind of brushed off by the West and went his own way. So that happened back in the year 2000. Also in 2000, of course, NATO, as we said, moved east, adding all these countries that had been part of the Russian sphere of influence, or Russia's neighbors, put it that way. And they were moving towards what's been called full-spectrum dominance, where one nation kind of is the number one, is on top of the rest of the world. Then in February 2014, this is given as a year where Russia invaded Ukraine, but also that year, in February 2014, Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych was overthrown. You might remember the street protests in Kiev. A lot of these, a certain number of those protesters were neo-Nazis from what's called the Azov Battalion. But anyway, these street protests overthrew Viktor Yanukovych, who we should remember was an elected president, and he was on the friendly terms with neighboring Russia. And so he was overthrown, and he fled the country. And so since then, you know, Ukraine has been a divided country. You know, if you can visualize the Ukraine on a map, you can see that, to me, it looks a bit like a kind of like a fried egg with two yolks. And the northern western yolk are the ethnic Ukrainians, and to the south and east are the ethnic Russians. And because of history, they're all part of one nation of Ukraine. We might keep in mind that over the years, Ukraine's borders have changed quite a bit. They've enlarged and shrunk, and so now you have kind of two ethnic linguistic groups in Ukraine. And they were, I imagine, they still, unless some have fled the country, that they are on roughly equal basis. And you would think in a situation like that, that the two sides where each has about half the country and half the population, that it'd be a smart thing that they learn to get along with each other. And either that, or you wonder why they have a single nation in the first place. Maybe Ukraine, if the two halves cannot get along and deal with each other in a rational way, then maybe they should go their separate ways. So, but when you look at the map, you can see what kind of one reason why Ukraine is having the problems it has. And so if people want to call in with questions or comments, the number is 503-231-8187. What do our listeners think? Do you think that the war may break out in Ukraine, or may enlarge in Ukraine? Give us a call, 503-231-8187. There are some folks or voices are saying that the U.S. is trying to overthrow Putin. I think Putin himself, by this time, he may believe this, but not only that, but Senator Lindsey Graham, he's sort of the nitwit from South Carolina, he wants to assassinate Putin, and he came right out and said so. You wonder why, how, if someone in Russia talked about assassinating Biden or President Trump or whoever, there'll be a lot of uproar and criticism. But here's a senator, a very powerful senator, talking openly about wanting to assassinate Vladimir Putin.
We have Jack on the line.
We have somebody on the line. Good morning.
Hi. Yeah, this has gotten to be quite a thing, and it's just really messing up the whole world in a lot of ways. The food thing is really quite an issue. Yeah, I'll just make one comment about that before going on. You know, we keep hearing, Russia is being demonized from every corner. We keep hearing about the Russian blockade of Odessa keeping Ukrainian grain from getting to the third world, where people are on the verge of starving. What did I see yesterday? 10 weeks of wheat left in the world or something like that. And what you never hear in the mainstream media is the fact that Russia opened safe corridors through the Black Sea. Now it's been for a couple of months, and guaranteeing protection of ships if they can get out of Ukrainian territorial waters. Why can't they? Because they can't get past the sea mines. Ukraine sowed sea mines on the ports, and not only that, they sunk barges with cranes on them, so that's another navigational hazard. And you could look this up by finding the at the International Maritime Organization. It's all discussed there. It's very clear. Mm-hmm. And but you never hear that. All you hear is that Russia is blockading the port of Odessa, and it's the Ukrainians who will not demine the port and allow the ships to leave. Well, they won't leave anyway with the mines floating there. It's a risk. You know, they simply won't do it. Their insurance companies probably wouldn't allow them to do it either. So there you got that situation. And this whole thing is just, every turn, you're getting this, the facts are getting skewed, and we're hearing a demonization of Russia at every angle. And if you go back, way back to this, to the wise people who have been warning about this for a long, long time, you go back to John Mearsheimer, who's, you know, power. He lectures on the geopolitics of the great powers, mm-hmm. and they or to Jack Matlock, who was ambassador to Russia. These are older, wiser heads who understand what's going on, and you talk to any of them, and you hear their lectures, and say, "Look, we've got the NATO has missiles in Romania. They're building the launch pads to put missiles in Poland. They may say that they're defensive missiles to protect from Turkey, but get serious. You know, it doesn't take much. I mean, software change, quick little software change, load it with a cruise missile, put it on nuclear tip, and you can put it in St. Petersburg or Moscow in a matter of minutes." And don't any of these people remember the Cuban Missile Crisis? You know, the Paul's article talked about the geriatric part of the Democratic Party, and that's blah, blah. But no, who do we got in that? Jake Sullivan, who isn't old enough to remember the Cuban Missile Crisis. These people simply have no grip on reality. You know, mm-hmm. And you hear John Mersheimer explain it. We're in Putin's sphere. The West is in Putin's sphere of influence. He won't allow it. The U.S. will not allow any any nation from any other part of the world to set up operations in the Americas. That's the Monroe Doctrine. And we've spent a lot of time and energy, blood and treasure to keep them out, you know, fighting wars all up and down the Western Hemisphere to guarantee that the United States is the hegemon in that sphere of influence.
Well, and brings to mind
they don't understand it.
One of the things that Putin has been saying is that we live in a multipolar world. In other words, there's not just one big shot kind of telling the rest of the world what to do. You have different nations, different powers, and they should be hopefully living at peace with each other. But if one power, and this is Putin's point of view, that one power wants to dominate the others, this is bound to lead to trouble, which is what we have right now. But anyway, I want to thank you for your call.
You
and
made the point of his wanting to have been his initiative to join NATO way back in 2000, and was rebuffed. And
mm-hmm,
you know,
it was.
So it's been 20 years of trying to demonize and take, and the goal is really to break up the Russian Federation and start, you know, send in a new flood of carpetbaggers and asset strip the whole place. That's what he came in to stop, the asset strippers who were in there during the Yeltsin era.
Boris Yeltsin was in charge.
Yep, that's right. And he came in and kicked those guys out, and of course they're the ones who teamed up with the oligarchs who became so powerful. And he's been, you know, I heard it discussed recently in a with the with people on a web podcast called The Duran. They were talking about in some ways, this is the best thing that's ever happened to Russia. Now, the oligarchs were taken down by the West, and Putin's saying, fine, you guys are gone. We're going to move forward without you now. And he's been trying to deal with those guys for 20 years. So anyway, it's a complicated thing, and Americans are, I would say most people I talk to are thoroughly duped by the mainstream media. And well, you just can't talk to people. You're called a Putin bot if you say anything that's counter to the received narrative.
Anyway, well, thank you for your call. And if anybody else has a question or a comment, the number to call is 503-231-8187. You know, before Putin, I don't know if people remember when Boris Yeltsin was president of Russia. That was back in the 1990s. And Yeltsin, well, he had his own personal problems, but he kind of gave away the store. He invited, he wanted to privatize the old Soviet Union. And so he invited in all these dealers who would break up, who he kind of sold off the Soviet Union in pieces, and that's sort of the origin of the a lot of the oligarchs. That's how they got their wealth. They bought Soviet assets very cheap, and then made a lot of profit off of them. And so that's one thing I'm sure that Yeltsin, eventually, Yeltsin kind of was unable to rule at all, and he, I believe Yeltsin appointed Putin to take his place. probably expecting that Putin would continue the giveaway, but Putin stopped the looting. And I think some folks may think that this is one reason why Putin is very much resented and so much anger directed towards him, because he stopped the gravy train. But anyway, if people want to call in, the number to call is 503-231-8187. Another thing that's much in the news these days is inflation. Last I saw, the inflation rate was something like 10% or whatever, and the price of everything is going up. And a lot of people seem to think that, well, this is something that we can deal with, that we can kind of make it stop, and that eventually it will go away. But to my mind, inflation is, I don't think inflation is going away. Inflation is probably going to be here for quite a long time. And the reason is that that oil is the basic resource that powers our economy. And the price of oil has gone up drastically. Last I heard, it was something like, I believe it hit $120 a barrel or something like that, which is a very high price. And that this is oil is it's a basic resource that powers the economy. You could even say that oil is the economy, and it's also in limited supply. There are a lot of analysts who say that that oil will actually run out sometime in this century, and realize that we are 22 years into the century already, and that sometime within this century, sooner or later, that the oil will become kind of vanish. So this is the last century for oil, and you would think that you would think that the thing to do would be to conserve the oil we have and use it for socially useful purposes. But apparently for some folks, oil is something to play games with. One thing that comes to mind is on a local level, is just the street racers here in Portland and other cities around the country. They will block intersections, and they will do all kinds of little road races and acrobatics. I think I read somewhere recently that they blocked off the I-5 bridge and sort of took it over to use it for their fun and games, and blocking intersections and blocking access to the bridge, having traffic backed up for I don't know how many miles. And when I read about that, I thought, somebody is going to get shot. Well, apparently, maybe somebody was shot. Somebody fired a gun, and whether anybody was injured or not, I don't know.
We have a caller. This,
yes?
We have a caller.
We have a caller online. Good morning, sir. You're on the air.
Yeah. You were talking a few minutes ago about the Monroe Doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
If the Monroe Doctrine was to keep foreign interest out of the Americas, mm-hmm. why today are they allowing foreign investors and foreign interests to buy up American housing, American land, and American farmland?
I don't know. I mean, how would you? Do you think that we could make a? Give an example of this.
That's what seems to be driving up the price of real estate. Foreign investors are coming in and buying up all this housing that the banks have repossessed from people, mm-hmm. as well as these Wall Street people. So why are they allowing, you know, land interest in the United States to be sold off to foreigners, even foreign citizens?
Well, I don't know.
Well, that's what I called up. I thought maybe you did know.
Well, I don't. It's well, one, you know, if I had a suspicious mind, I might just say, well, maybe there's some behind the scenes fixing going on that, you know, it's not all foreigners who are buying up real estate in this country. It's local investors too. You have a whole kind of investor class, and they are, I suppose, in a way, they're very multinational. They are a class by themselves, and you know, they buy and sell property all around the world. We do the same thing to other countries. So, but anyway, you find that maybe they see that you know, that housing is becoming a scarce item, and that they can you know, they can corner the market now and then sell it at a high price later on. That's my suspicion.
Yeah. Well, that's all I got for you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you for your call. It's getting near the end of the hour. We might have time for another caller. The number is 503-231-8187. I was going to say, you remember Boris Yeltsin, who was the president of Russia before Putin, and he kind of gave away the store, and so Putin put a stop to that and stopped the selling off of Russia, which I think is one reason why he is widely disliked by some people. But, you know, we might say a few things about inflation. It's very much in the news, and it's based on the rising price of oil. And so, you know, this might be, like I said before, that this might be the last century in which we have oil. You know, it is at the rate it's being used up, it may be gone before the century is over. And what we do then, I don't know. I mean, there's all this talk about electric cars, and but everything we build kind of uses oil as part of the manufacturing process. So it's hard to see how we can get away from oil. And meanwhile, you know, street races burn it up, and so on. And recently, I saw street racers they get their cars confiscated in LA. They not only get the cars confiscated, that down in LA they can take the cars and they put them in a kind of a giant machine that crunches these cars into blocks, solid blocks of a crunched metal and glass and rubber. But this is cars, they so much dominate the economy that the momentum keeps us burning oil, which is going which is becoming more and more scarce. And so you know, it makes you wonder about what the future has in store for us.
We have a caller, Robbie, on the air.
We have one more caller. Hello, you're on the air.
Good morning. Yeah, I don't mean to switch gears, but I was wanting to talk about the Ukraine and Russia stuff, if that was all right.
Yeah, you got about 1 minute or so because we're near the end of the half hour, but go ahead.
I just wanted to bring up how I think that there was a lot of disinformation going on with our media, and just last Thursday there was a report in the Pentagon or the CIA release that they are funding biolabs in Ukraine, which is exactly what Russia said at the beginning. And I just kind of encourage people to look that up, because I don't see how we can trust our own news anymore, and especially at a time of war when we're against another, you know, another world power, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, I remember when the biolabs were first brought up, they were kind of put down as sort of a figment of Putin's imagination, but it turns out that there were biolabs, so I don't know as much as I should about them, so I will check out, see what I can find about this, and I invite everybody else to do the same.
I would also say there's a monkeypox lab in Nigeria, and the U.S. Department of Defense has been working a lot with monkeypox the past couple months, so there's a lot of interesting stuff there. But I'm going to leave it at that. Thank you very much for the show.
Well, thank you for your call. It's 9:29, so this our half hour is over. I want to thank the callers for their analysis and points of view, and we want to keep the conversation going on KBOO, your radio station. Stay tuned.